This is Aaron and Ash. You're listening to Path into Product, a show for students and professionals considering product management as a career. We interview actual product professionals and share their insights and tips for getting into the rewarding career that is product management.
Hey there, Path into Product listeners. If you'd like a discount to Clement's course, Solving the PM Interview, stay tuned for details.
Well, we're excited to be here. Once again, we have Clement Cao with us. So grateful to have him on the podcast. He has been officially in product management for around 5 years. He's the co-founder and founder of two companies and is working on teaching and training product managers with his current company called Product Teacher. So welcome, Clement. Great to have you. And we'd love to start off with this question of how would you define product management to someone who has never heard of it before?
Yeah, great question. So in terms of, talking about product management to someone who's never done it before, the analogy that I like to use is a product manager is both a coach and a janitor for some digital thing that a company is creating. And so what I mean by that is, let's say that Facebook is currently running with Facebook Messenger. They want to be able to grow out that product. They want more people to be able to use it. They want it to grow. Well, you need to serve two roles if you're going to be the product manager for Facebook Messenger. On the one hand, you need to be a coach. And so you're going to be working with all of these teammates that, you don't actually hire or fire. They don't report to you. But you're going to be working with them to actually build out all of the new features that you want in Facebook Messenger, right? So you're trying to push them to do better. You're trying to get them to be more user focused. You want them to work together really seamlessly. And all that's kind of more on that coaching side. We're going to be pulling together, what's the vision? What's the strategy? How do I get the most out of each person and really help their careers grow? So that's kind of like the coaching side. And then the janitorial side is one of the truths of product management is sometimes there are things that will wind up blocking the development of your product because products are really complex. They're digital. There are so many different things that you could tackle with it. And sometimes there are just things that you just got to jump in and go do, even if no one else is going to do it. And so as an example, say that your team recently had an analyst leave the team. And so now you don't have dashboarding analytics. You might have to jump in there and write some analyses yourself. If you don't happen to have a QA tester on hand, you might need to test a couple of cases just to make sure that, hey, my product is still functioning the way that I expect it to. Say that you've got some pretty, you've got a customer who's really interested in the product, but they really want to understand your roadmap. Well, now you're going to shift into more of this kind of sales type role of, hey, here is the vision. Here's why we really want you to join us on this journey. And so that's kind of how I think about product is really these two combined roles of coaching this, multidisciplinary team to go build out something that people are just going to really love and also create value for the company, but also sometimes taking on that janitorial work to figure out how do we get this stuff unblocked, right? Like what are the things that are blocking us from getting things live, from making customer lives better, from capturing value for our company? And that's kind of more that janitorial sense. So that's how I'd say product management works.
Love that. That's awesome. We've never had quite an analogy like that before. So that's really fun to hear. I think we're actually going to dive into some of those things that you talked about there a little later. But we would love to hear, we love stories. And so we'd love to hear what has been your path into product? How did you get into product management?
Yeah, that is a fantastic question. So I'm glad that you like stories because mine is unfortunately just a little bit rambly. It wasn't a very straightforward path into product management. And so quick background. I actually graduated from UC Berkeley with a double major in things that have nothing to do with product management. So my majors were molecular and cell biology and business. So I don't know how to code. I don't know how to design. Like those were just not my backgrounds. And so when I graduated, I had no idea what I was going to do because a business major and a biology major, like what career are you supposed to take? It's like not super clear. Because if I went into a lab to take advantage of that biology major, I'd be sitting there growing cells all day and like not talking to people. And that's not what I wanted. But on the flip side, if I went, I couldn't really go down the business path because I hadn't specialized in anything. I wasn't in accounting, I wasn't in finance, I wasn't in banking, I wasn't in marketing. So it's, okay, well, it's pretty clear that I'm not going to be able to do something specialized in business. Well, why don't we try to leverage both and jump into management consulting, right? Because the benefit of management consulting is you're going to be able to work with all of these different companies and see the challenges that they face. And maybe you'll find that there's something that's really interesting about them, and then you're going to want to jump into their company to help them out kind of as like a full-time employee. So I said, sure, let's go see the world, right? You know, let's get into management consulting, work with lots of different clients, all that fun stuff. So that was my very first job out of college. And there, the very funny thing was I actually never wound up getting captured by my own customers. I wound up getting captured by a different department within the company. And so what I mean by that is the way that we did consulting back then, I was working at Applied Predictive Technologies. It's currently a MasterCard company. And what it does is it helps really large brands. So for example, McDonald's, Starbucks, et cetera, analyze all of their transactional data to see test versus control. Is this initiative that we're running going to work? And if so, which kinds of stores or which kinds of promotions are going to work better in whatever particular locations, right? So it's very much kind of almost like A-B testing, but in the real world. And so my involvement as a management consultant was, of course, to help executives determine what is our strategic roadmap, but then also help them run analyses of, okay, can we prove this out? How are we going to test it, right? Come up with this testing framework, as well as train their end users on how to use our analytics platform to crunch all of those numbers and let them know, okay, what are the kinds of things that are really going to work? And the funny thing, though, was that the software that we had was built by PhD statisticians, but the end users were not PhD statisticians. They were marketing analysts, operations analysts. And so they would call me every day and say, Clement, I don't really understand what this chart means. Or Clement, I don't think I set this thing up right. Or like, Clement, what is this error? Like, I'm really frustrated. And so I found that I was spending 3 to 4 hours a day, every single day on the phone, doing customer support, which we could have fixed by having a better user experience, having more design. And so at that point in time, I said, what if I became a designer, right? So again, still not in product yet, right? There's still a little bit of a path to go. I said, what if I went to design? What if I help people by pulling together more intuitive designs and see kind of how we can help people be more self-serve? Because it's not just me on the phone 3 to 4 hours a day. It's me and another 100 consultants within the company. And so like that is so much time that we're not using to make our customers better, right? Like we're just spending all this time doing tech support. We can do better than this. So I pitched my design team on joining them. And they said, no, you are in San Francisco, we are in Washington, DC, and you need to be here with us. This was back before the day of like lots of teleworking, right? And so they're like, for that time of collaboration, you just have to be here. We can't have you. I'm like, okay, makes sense. And so then I decided, what if I do this instead? I'm just gonna capture everyone's feedback, right? Of I got stuck on this screen, here's why I got stuck on this screen, here's what I was expecting to do on this screen. And I basically accidentally invented user research at my company without realizing that I'd invented it. And so I filed all of these really in-depth reports of, hey, today this particular user at this particular company, they ran into this issue. This was something that called me up about. Here are the problems that they faced. Here was their mental model. Here's why they hit these problems. And I would send this over to the product team of, hey, this is what folks are running into. The funny thing is, at that product company, I'm still the person with the most Jira tickets in my name. There is no one who came close. And so they still like to say, oh, Clement still has the most tickets within the company. so that's always really fun. But basically, the product team had realized that, hey, we've got a user researcher now within the company. Like his full-time role is still management consultant, right? So like they're not paying me as a user researcher. That's not my formal role. But we're getting all this free work out of Clement for understanding our users. Why don't we go learn what Clement has to say? And so we scheduled a couple of initial meetings where I talked them through, here are the challenges that we're facing, here are the things that I think we should really invest in the product. And I said, sure, let's start prototyping these things. And so through that, we basically had pulled together this sort of incubator where we were able to test out all of these new features, these new designs, and make sure that they were actually intuitive from the start, right? Make sure that we were actually building for marketing analysts and operations analysts instead of PhD statisticians. And so really, really proud to say that through that work, we were able to unlock this new generation of features that have much better usage, that are much more intuitive, and we're not on the phone all the time anymore. And so that was really fun. And so I was now there kind of like as this hybrid management consultant slash user researcher. And what happened was another company reached out to me. They're a real estate company based out in San Mateo, California, called Movoto. And I said, hey, Clement, you are doing all this user research stuff, but you also clearly understand how to do consulting strategy, et cetera. we want to break into a new market within real estate. We're really good at working with people who are trying to buy homes because it's very easy to know when someone wants to buy a house, right? Typically, they're going to say, I want to go look at open houses. Please pair me with the real estate agent. Super straightforward. But what if someone wants to sell a house, right? How do you know that they want to sell that house? Where are they in that decision-making process? Because if you give them a real estate agent too late, they've already picked one, tough luck. And if you send it to them too early, they're going to say, this is irrelevant to me. Why are you spamming me? Right. And so it's how do you get that real estate agent in front of that home seller at the right point in time? How do they actually think? And so he said, Clement, come join us. I said, no, I don't want to. I'm having lots of fun over here. And I said, but we'll pay you 20% more and you'll get to do 20% less working hours. I was like, okay, that's a pretty good deal.
That's a good deal. Yeah.
So I jumped over. So basically I packed up my stuff, moved out of San Francisco, went down to San Mateo in a city that where I knew no one, to go start this new adventure as really a full-time user researcher with, again, no formal training as a user researcher. And so what I was doing was I was diving deep to understand not just home sellers' pains, but also listing agents' pains, right? Because home sellers are going to work with people who put their houses up on the market. They're called listing agents. And I really wanted to understand, well, what are the dynamics between the two? What are the challenges that they face when they work together? How do we make sure that we're pairing the best agents with the best sellers that are fits for them, right? You know, if you are someone who buys lots of investment properties, you want a real estate agent who knows how to buy investment properties. If you're a first-time home buyer and, you know, you are mostly a Spanish speaker, you want to be paired with an agent who can speak Spanish and who will work you through that entire first-time process of how do I buy a home, right? And so I really wanted to dive in. And basically, we've broken out these five different user segments of home sellers. And we said, okay, great. These are attractive segments. Let's go put this research on the table. We'll go file away that report, and we're done. I said, no, absolutely not. Like, this is not how I like to do work. If I'm going to do something, it should have real-world impact. Like, it should actually be real. And so I took the report findings, and I went back out, and I spoke with some of the users, and I said, what if we sold you a product that looked like this? What if we sold you a service that looked like that? Right. Basically, I started surfacing up all of these hypothetical value propositions and business models. And we found a couple that were really, really intriguing, things that we could uniquely do that no one else in the market could do. And we saw a lot of excitement. People were really, really excited. And so then I basically started this campaign of pitching to my CEO, to my executive team. We're going to start a business within a business because we can solve a real pain that no one's solving right now. And we can do big things. Like, we should not just do user research and leave it in some recommendation on the shelf. We should actually go implement it. After 3 or 4 months of lobbying, lots of SWOT analysis, lots of, you know, management consulting speak of, you know, and who are the competitors and, like, what does, like, the financial models look like, all that fun stuff. I finally convinced them. And so they said, okay, great. Current product team, everyone who's currently working on the home buying stuff, we've got this home seller thing that we're going to go launch. Who wants to do it? And it was like, you're joking. We're busy. We're running a business right now. We don't have time to go do whatever pet project you think we're going to go do. We're not doing this. And so my CEO said, okay, that's not great. I've got an option. I could go out and try to hire a product manager, but that's not super compelling because then what if they're not a fit with the team? And what if they don't know the user? And what if they don't know real estate, right? Like that. And then, like, the entire, like, hiring process could take forever. Or we could take this user researcher who we don't pay as much as the product manager. We could turn him into a product manager. And I remember when he gave me that proposal, I was furious with him because I said, you are joking. I do not know how to design. I do not know engineering. I don't know the first thing about merging code. I don't know how to QA. I don't know how to release. I don't know how to roll back. I know nothing, like nothing, nothing, nothing. This is the worst decision of your life. He politely disagreed and kept trying to convince me to serve as a product manager. And after a while, we came to the consensus, the compromise, that you're going to shadow an engineer for a week, right? Like, you're just going to, like, learn everything that they do on the job. You're just going to sit right next to them. You're going to ask them all the dumb questions that you have. You're just going to shadow them. You're going to learn a bunch about engineering. I'm going to sit you down with a designer. You're going to sit with them for a week. You're going to learn about InVision and Figma and Balsamiq and all these other things. You're going to learn about font kernings and whatever. And, like, you're just going to learn it. And then we will make you an associate product manager. So that's what they did. And so then I suddenly became in charge of, you know, all these engineers among these designers. And I was running my own product for the very first time. My CEO wasn't wrong, because within 6 months, that new business that we created started earning more money than the existing business did itself. And so because of that, they decided to promote me up to product manager and then up to group product manager to take on more and more responsibilities. And so, yeah, so that was my very long story into product management. For all the listeners out there, if you're asking, what am I supposed to learn from that journey? I think there are a couple things that stand out. The first thing that really stands out is you'll notice that I wasn't really content with the way that the companies that I worked at currently ran, right? It's not, I didn't really like seeing people be in pain and have people recognize that there was a pain and do nothing about it. Like, that's just not how I function. I'm always about, if I see a pain, I want to go solve it, right? And because I demonstrated that I could go above and beyond in solving that pain while still demonstrating that I had competency in whatever it was that I had been originally hired for, right? Companies didn't see me as a risk. They didn't see me as going rogue. They thought, oh, well, I'm getting all this free, valuable work out of Clement. What if we moved him into that higher value role instead, right? And so that then leads me to really strongly believe that we all have a say in terms of how we want our jobs to turn out. Like, of course, we need to make sure that for whatever thing we've been hired for, that base responsibility we do a really good job with, but we can always bend that a little bit further. We can always lean into something where we feel more interest, where we see an unsolved need, an unsolved pain, and go do that. And over time, companies will realize, wow, we're getting a lot of value here. And we should have you step up into this larger role because we really need someone like that right now. And so kind of that would be kind of the way that I summarize my own career journey of falling into product without really realizing that I want to be a product manager. But again, one of the things that you notice is in this journey, at no point did I ever say, gee, I sure want to be a product manager, right? Like, it just kind of happened. And now that I am, I love it. Like, it's such a fun job. It's really, really, it's really incredible to create all this impact. But I just didn't realize I wanted to become one. And so I guess that just goes to show that, you know, you can very much accidentally fall into product and still have a really fun, successful time with it. If you're already interested in product, you already have an advantage up on where I used to be back then, because like, I straight up didn't know that I wanted to do it. So that was my journey.
Wow, that is so fun. Thank you for sharing that. There's so much in there that I want to dig into, right? And it seems like you're obviously a very smart individual. You had some training, you had some skills, and you were so focused on, I just need to deliver value in this thing where I'm at. And it may not be what I was hired to do, but it's the right thing to do. And I think that relentless focus on delivering value is at the heart, I think, of what separates product managers from other folks. Is just that I'm going to solve this problem. This is what's needed, right? And I love how this CEO has to convince you, right? Has to pull you along, into this product journey. Do you remember the moment when you decided, I can do this. I may not have asked for this. I kind of stumbled upon it. The CEO is more or less persuading me, forcing me, coercing me, however you might say that, right? But do you remember the moment when you decided, okay, yeah, I've shadowed an engineer, I've shadowed a designer, I can do this product thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. So I'm just gonna be real with everyone. I had major imposter syndrome. I still have major imposter syndrome. And it is okay to feel that as long as you don't let that get in the way of believing in yourself and making forward progress. And what I mean by that is, I don't think I ever had a time where I said, I confidently feel like I'm a legit product manager. I know that I'm gonna rock it on the job. I straight up did not feel that for the longest time. But I think the value of that is that it kept pushing me to think, what is something else that I can learn today? What is something else that I can do to be better at empowering my teammates, at mastering my craft, and not rest on my laurels? And so one of the things that I actually did was, this is not something that most product managers would do, but one of the things that I wound up eventually owning back at Movoto was I started owning our Salesforce implementation, because that's the fundamental powerings of how we work with real estate agents, as well as call center operators in terms of routing these leads to these agents. So we were using Salesforce to do all of that. And I said, it's great that we're using Salesforce, and I can probably product manage even without like fully understanding all of like the nitty gritty of it. But I want to do more than that. Like, if I'm going to be working in Salesforce day in, day out, I should probably become a subject matter expert in it. And so I decided that on the weekends, I was going to study to become a Salesforce administrator. The company did not ask me to do it. I just very, very much wanted to learn this, because then that way I could potentially propose, hey, well, due to these other platform capabilities that Salesforce has, engineering team, design team, we can use these, right? Or, hey, here's some patterns that I see from my training. Why don't we use these patterns instead, right? So like going further into that subject matter, even without people asking. And it paid off in spades because as I became that Salesforce admin, on top of my product management work, I felt a lot more comfortable about, okay, I know that I'm not screwing up the way that, you know, roles and permissions works, or like, I know that I'm not like breaking the platform this way. I know that generally Salesforce has like these kinds of limitations, but also these kinds of capabilities. And so like, this is the landscape that we get to play in. And so that was very much driven by imposter syndrome. I did not feel comfortable then. I think one of the things that I straight up did not feel comfortable about is when design would bring into design reviews of, hey, Clement, you know, we've spent, you know, countless hours refining all of these design explorations, and we'd love for you to weigh in on which one makes the most sense. I was like, I don't know. I can show you right now. The only thing I can draw is stick figures. Like, I just cannot draw. Like, the best thing that I can draw is quite literally just like this. This is about the maximum that I can draw, and there's not a lot more that I can do than that.
It's a beautiful stick figure.
And so they're like, Clement, we want you to weigh in on what should the onboarding flow look like, right? I'm just, I don't know. It's not my expertise. But I think one of the things that just really helped was leaning into that of, okay, well, why do I feel so unprepared? What are the things that I can learn to help me feel less unprepared? What are the things that I can learn from my colleagues and help them make better decisions, right? I think one of the things that I realized over time is you do not need to be a designer to be an effective design partner. You do not need to be an engineer to be an effective engineering partner. What you need to know is you need to know what are the things that they're worried about? What are the places where they don't have context where we can help unblock them, right? And so as an example, one time there was a particular bug that came up on the engineering front. They're saying, Clement, right now, like, there's this thing that's happening, and you know, this thing that's happening is causing users to not be able to log in because blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whoa, that's way too technical for me. I don't understand. What is the problem that you're currently facing? And it's, okay, well, to dumb it down, right now we have something that's called a race condition. I'm like, okay, tell me what a race condition is. Well, what a race condition is when you have two pieces of logic that are running and they're racing against each other. And sometimes one beats the other and sometimes one beats the other one. I'm like, okay, that sounds not so great. And so what do you need for me to help you make a decision? It's, oh, well, right now you can get one of two results and I don't know which result we should be using. Tell me more. I'm like, okay, so from a business perspective, we typically expect that users want to prioritize this over that. Here's the way that these other features were built. Here's the way that the design team had intended it to be. Here's all of this context. Therefore, I think you should go with option B. You should always resolve the race condition by using option B instead of trying to use option A. It's like, okay, great. I can set some sort of timer, make sure that option B always happens first if we detect option B. Otherwise, we'll let option A work, right? And I couldn't read the code. Like, I straight up couldn't help there, but I helped them understand that, okay, these are the things that the business cares about. And so that's why I should prioritize this solution over that solution, right? When we're working with design, right, one of the things that's really important is who is the user that we're solving for? Why are we solving for them? What other systems are they using? And how much time do we have, right? Like, do we need to do something that's quick and dirty and get it out the door because there's a business impact to this? Or should we take our time to really refine it because that is the core thing that we're using to differentiate ourselves in the market, right? And so, again, I realized long and rambly answer to when did I feel comfortable? The answer was never. I never felt comfortable. I still don't feel comfortable. But I think that doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think leaning into that discomfort of, I know I can do better. There's definitely something that I can learn here to be a more effective partner to others. What is the problem that they're facing and how can I lean into that? I think has very much enabled me to grow my career quickly and enabled me to ship, you know, all of these products that have made a positive impact in people's lives.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. The imposter syndrome, it's real. I think all of us still feel that to some extent, right? And it does motivate us to learn and to grow and to expand our skill sets. I'm also curious, on the other side of things, is, you know, as the CEO convinced you to be in product, and now you've been in product for a while, did you ever have a moment where you were like, oh man, I made the wrong choice. I need to go back to management consulting, to UX research, to biology, whatever it was. But did you ever think, oh man, product's not for me? And what did you do about that?
Yeah, great question. I think there will always be times when your faith will be tested. And I think this applies in multiple arenas of life. When I ran into my first breakdown, I think one of the challenges was just we were working on these incredibly tight timelines with a particular development partner that was not really set up for success. And the results didn't pan out very well. And I was like, I think I just sunk the company. I think I just burned a bunch of money and I'm pretty sure I'm the wrong person for the job. And so I very much questioned myself. I was like, should I just go back to user research? Because I don't feel good. I feel like I just sunk the company. But one of the things that was very helpful was my mentors had, my manager at the time, and you know, my mentor, he said, Clement, you have to realize that product management is all about increasing the expected outcome of any given initiative, right? Like anytime you're trying to ship some initiative, it will always carry risk, right? There's gonna be some percentage risk that it will turn out poorly, and there is some percentage chance that it will turn out great. What you want to do is you want to minimize the impact of the bad, you want to maximize the impact of the good, and you want to weight more of the percentage of outcomes happening towards the good outcomes versus the bad outcomes. And if you can shift that distribution, it doesn't matter if you failed or not, because you still increase the expected outcome. Like that is the job that we hired you for. And I was like, that is incredibly helpful to remember. Like, I am here not necessarily to build the next, you know, TikTok or Facebook or like runaway, whatever. My job is to increase the expected outcome, to increase the return on investment for the initiatives that will help our users and our company move forward, right? And so when thinking kind of those percentage chances is, okay, I know that the work that I'm doing, I'm mitigating this risk. I'm increasing the chances that this thing does well, but I'm not going to beat myself up if we happen to be in one of those worlds where it doesn't work. And that was a really helpful insight to have had early in my career. Because later, at Blend, where I moved later, one of my initiatives was to serve as this incubator for new businesses. And so basically pulling together all of these 0-to-1 prototypes, proofs of concept of things that we wanted to ship, right? And so we talked about a variety of consumer finance products, and there was this one particular business line where we had the hypothesis. Typically, when we see how mortgages are being originated, you see that there's this like very long tail where you have some institutions. So for example, US Bank or Wells Fargo, they make up a very large proportion of the loans that are made in the United States. But at the very, very long end, you have all these mom and pop shops that are doing maybe, you know, 5 loans, 10 loans a month. But in the aggregate, there's still a lot of area under this curve. There's still a lot of people who are not being served with really great seamless technology to go get mortgages faster and more transparently and more seamlessly. And so Clement, I want you to go figure out how do we attack that space, which I went after. And after, you know, 8 months, which was our time box, we said, it's not working. We're shutting it down. Sorry, customers, users, what have you, we're terminating this. And that was another crisis moment of just, oh, wow, I just killed a business. And that feels really bad. But in retrospect, you know, we learned so much from the experience. We understood what were the conditions for causing it to fail. Which conditions did we control? Which conditions did we not control? Right, running all these retrospectives of the things that we could have done better next time, et cetera. And I am glad to say that now, you know, 3 years down the road, I did not lead this. I didn't lead this other initiative. But basically, what we're doing now is we're reviving this concept that I previously tested out some number of years ago. And they very much got to see around all of the corners because, well, Clement already ran into all these failures for us, right? We already can see these are the things I need to go watch out for. We're now a much more mature product company. We now have much better relationships. We much more have much more influence in the landscape. We can now control for these factors that we couldn't control in the past. The landscape is now more conducive for us to launch this business now. We're doing it, right? And so I think in terms of those crisis of faith moments, it helps to ask yourself, you know, why do I feel this way? And to acknowledge it. I think it's not helpful to run away from it. It doesn't help to bottle it up. I know that for a while, I tried to escape by playing a lot of video games and to not think about the issue. I can tell you from first-hand experience, that's not helpful. It helps to just confront yourself and say, look, I know that you're feeling scared. I know that you're not feeling great and that you feel that, you know, your self-worth is down the drain. Tell me more, right? What makes you feel this way? What are the things where you don't feel that you're gonna succeed, et cetera? And get all of that down on paper. And as you get it out on paper and it's no longer bouncing around your head at night while you're trying to fall asleep, you can start to grapple with it for real. You can say, okay, well, is that true, right? Is it true that I didn't do the best that I possibly could? No, it's not true. Is it true that I am an utter worthless failure? No, because here are all these other initiatives that I've shipped before in the past that worked, right? Is it true that everything was possibly in my control? It's not true. Like we, as much as we want to control everything, we don't happen to be architects of the universe. Like that's just not how our lives play out. And so it's okay for things to fail on us because we just don't control all the factors and that's okay. And so I think taking the time to just sit with those difficult emotions and grapple with them and, you know, try to talk to yourself as like another person and kind of work through these concerns together is a very helpful way to resolve that and to decide, okay, is this something I want to continue pursuing? And if it's, hey, I do think that my talents are better invested elsewhere, then trust yourself in that, right? Give yourself a little bit of a testing period, right? Like, go try to do that thing on the side and see if that's something that you enjoy. Or ask yourself, am I just burnt out? Did I just happen to get staffed on a project I didn't really like, right? Like, would I have felt differently if I were doing something else instead that was still product, but just not this product, right? Like, asking yourself these kind of difficult questions helps to elucidate, is it really that I don't fit the role of product manager? Or is it that there were things that were outside of my control that just happened? And it's okay, because I still feel convicted that I can provide the most value to people by serving in this role. Right? So that is how I've worked through these crisis of faith moments, and they've made me believe even more over time, because it's okay, I have survived these failures. I've learned a lot from it. I know that I can bet on myself. And even if the outcome wasn't good, at least I invested in the process, and the process is what matters.
Yeah, beautifully said. Thank you for being vulnerable and for your tips there. That's great.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to go back earlier to something that you said, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You talked about this moment where in your mind you're saying, well, I don't know how to code, I don't know how to design, so I don't know if I know how to be a good product manager, right? I am so curious about, how did you come to know that those were important things for product managers to know how to do?
Yeah, great question. Honestly, I think the problem was I had a biased misconception of what do product managers need to know, right? Basically, people kept telling me, you know, even before I became a product manager, oh, if you are looking at Facebook or Google, it's ideal if you were an X engineer, right? Or, oh, if you're gonna be building a mobile app, you really wanna make sure that you have really solid design chops, that you're building things that are really delightful, et cetera. And so kind of in the background, I kept picking up on all of these signals of, oh, you need to be really good at engineering, you need to be really good at design, you need to be able to read code, you need to be able to conduct your own analyses, you need to do all these different things, you need to basically be a Swiss Army knife and be a master at everything. And I realized eventually over time that those are simply myths or misconceptions, because there's something in there that people don't talk through very clearly. It is, would it be better if you knew how to code generally? Yes, but we all have limited time, right? Like, kind of, if you think about the way that our skills, how each person's skills play out, right? Like, imagine that your x-axis is all the possible skills that you could have, and your y-axis is the level of mastery that you have in your skills. There's some set of distributions that you have. There's some things where you're really, really good, and there's some things where you're just, like, barely scraping by. And if you had infinite time, yes, you ideally want every single skill to be at 100%. You want to be the world's master at everything, right? But we are not all grandmasters at chess, right? Like, we are not all, you know, negotiations grandmasters. We are not all amazing growth marketers. Like, that's just not how people work. We don't have infinite time. We don't have infinite capacity to learn. And so then the better question to ask is, which of these skills is going to give me more bang for my buck? Which are the skills that my teammates need from me, that my company needs from me, and invest there instead? And so one of the things that I learned is when I was trying to dive in with engineers of, okay, well, how are you merging code? How are you rolling it back, et cetera? At some point, one of them said, Clement, I appreciate that you're trying to learn as much as you can, but you don't need to be one of us. Like, the things that we're running into is not that we need another engineer, because if we need another engineer, we would hire another engineer. What we need is we need the business direction. Like, we do not know, should I be building it in direction A or direction B or direction C? I've got all these different options, but I don't know how it's gonna impact the business. I'm like, oh, I can do that. I know how to represent the business. Or it's, you know, we don't talk to users all the time. We don't see all the Salesforce reports that are coming in. We don't see all of the Zendesk tickets, right? What are the things that people are struggling with? And it's, oh, I know that, right? Like, I can tell you all that stuff. And so I think one of the things that I learned is that different teams need you to bring different things to the table, right? As an example, say that you are a Stripe product manager, and you're working at Stripe. Well, Stripe is this, you know, APIs payments infrastructure that is used throughout the world. And so, yeah, you probably need to be kind of technical if you want to be a Stripe PM. Like, that's just because that's what the team needs from you. You probably need to be really smart about understanding, you know, the performance of various algorithms and, you know, the different infrastructures that you could have. But you don't need that if you're trying to launch a totally new loans business at some company, right? Like there, it matters a lot more, you know, do I know how to underwrite a loan? Do I know how to process a loan? Do I know how to intake the application for a loan? Those things don't have anything to do with being technical. And so it's much more important to take the time to determine whose pain am I solving and why should I solve those pains by growing in this skill set, rather than just kind of letting the conventional wisdom convince you that you should be good at all of these other things. Because yes, we should all be good at sales and marketing and finance and accounting and legal compliance and information security and engineering and design, right? We should be good at all of these things. We should be good at organizational behavior and psychology. We should be good at pricing, right? Like we should be good at international expansion. Those are all things that we can and should be good at. But the question is, which is the one that if I invest here, I'm going to be able to create the most value for the company, right? And kind of that comes in two forms. One of the forms is how badly does the company need the skill set? And the other one is how quickly can I learn it, right? Because even if the company needs it really badly, if it's something that you're just not going to learn very quickly on, it's okay. It's okay to call things a lost cause because you need to balance your investment. You need to balance your return on investment. And if you spending 100 hours to try to move your impact by 1%, you could have actually just spent 10 hours somewhere else to move your impact up by 2%. You probably should take like the 10-hour one, right? And so a lot of it is just being a lot more centered around how do I create value for other people? And just being realistic with yourself of, I'm just going to be better at some things than other things, and that's okay. And it's okay that I have these gaps because there are all of these other subject matter experts and teammates that I get to lean on. Like, I don't have to do all of this alone, and I shouldn't be expected to do all of it alone. So I would say part of the challenge of why it's so hard to know how to be successful at product is because there's all of this conventional wisdom that says we should be good at everything. And yes, that's true, but it doesn't take into account the reality that one, we all have limited time, and two, we're differentially good at different things. And as long as we find, here's the thing that I'm good at for a company that needs that thing, if we can find that fit, we're golden, right? But if we are good at something and the company doesn't need it, doesn't matter, right? And so that's just something to really keep in mind. I think one of the things that I decided early on in my career is, you know, I could become a software engineer. It's not like I can't learn that skill set. I've figured out biology before. Like, biology was not a walk in the park. And so I can probably figure out how to code. But the question is, well, should I? Or should I be learning something else instead? And I said, look, for me to learn engineering, I would have to take all of this additional time doing whatever. I could probably spend that time doing better user interviews. I could spend that time empathizing better with my teammates. I can spend that time further strengthening our company's processes. I can come up with better documentation. I can come up with better templates. Like, there are all these things that I could do that will yield us value faster than me trying to become another software engineer. And so that's what I did. And that has paid off in spades. I think one of the biggest compliments that you get is when an engineer tells you, you are the best product manager I've ever worked with, and you're not technical, right? Like, that is one of the biggest compliments you can ever hear from engineers.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've gotten that before. And it's incredibly humbling to hear that. And it's very eye-opening of, oh, I don't need to code to make their lives better, right? As long as I understand what are the struggles that they're facing and how do I break down these struggles, whether it's this team's not working with me, or I need this resource, I need to go get it, or I don't understand what the priority is, or I'm worried that, you know, the timelines are gonna slip and I need you to reset customer expectations, right? Whatever the pain is, if I can understand that pain and solve that pain, they're going to trust me and they're going to lean in and be able to do better work faster at higher quality. And that's what really matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, thank you. I love how you say that. And you sort of take like an opportunity cost analysis towards which skills should I pursue, right?
Yeah.
And the last thing engineers need is another engineer, right? They'll go get one who's really good.
Yeah.
But they need that business input from you. I think that's fantastic. I want you to go back in time to your younger self, a younger Clement, and if you could go back in time and tell yourself, you know, right after you've graduated with business and biology, what single reason would you give yourself of why someone should choose product management as a career?
That is a great question. Why should someone choose product management as a career? I think one of the things that I never really fully crystallized until I was actually working for a few years is, what do I want to be doing with myself, right? It's not that I want to be paid a lot of money. It's not that I want to have a lot of prestige or be famous. It is, I want to go solve something. Like there is some, there are places where people are hurting and I want to go take that hurt away from them. And I question whether my college self would have known this. Maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have. But if he were you know, open to the concept of we are here to solve pain, I think I would have told past me, product management is one of the best ways that you can solve pain because you are basically coordinating all these different functions together to identify what is the biggest pain to go after. And you're kind of synergizing everyone to work together where you can deliver 10 times the results of people just doing it independently, right? Like you are serving as this master coordinator and making sure that we are identifying the right pains and that we are solving them deeply in a way that actually works, in a way that actually scales, right? You get to have both breadth and depth. Breadth in terms of, you know, the number of customers that you serve, as well as depth in terms of how deeply you're solving that problem. And on top of that, you don't just get to solve the pain for your end users, because you know those are the people who are using your product. You also get to solve pain for all of your cross-functional stakeholders, right? I don't know how the roadmap's being built. Well, let me tell you how the roadmap's being built. Like, here's how we prioritize and here's how to get your thing on the list, right? Or I don't know how the company's making decisions on what we're building next. Don't worry, I got you. Like, here's how it works. Like, I have, like, you get to have so much opportunity to make your own colleagues feel so much more empowered and excited about the work that they're doing. And that means a lot. Like, that is actually incredible. And so I think that's what I would have wanted to tell myself back then of, what you can, product management is a really great way for you to solve pains for your users and for your colleagues. And it's going to be your job to go figure out what are those pains and then figure out like, how do you go attack those pains? So that's what I would have told myself. But I think one of the things that I want to just caution is there are days, to be transparent, there are days when I wish I had come out of college as an associate product manager. There are definitely days when I wish that. Because, oh, well, there are all these other people, right? So I became an associate product manager 3 or 4 years into my career. And so I was like, oh, like that's 3 or 4 years that I wasted, that are lost or whatever. And like everyone else is so ahead of me. But when I actually ask myself, if you were an associate PM and you had never been a consultant, you had never been an analyst, you had never been a user researcher, do you think you would have resonated that deeply with other people's pains? Do you think you would have really understood the problems of how PhD statisticians might build with themselves in mind instead of marketing analysts in mind? Or like, do you think that you would have been able to spin up a business and then been totally okay killing off that business, right? Like, is that something that you're confident that you'd be able to say? And it's no, like I probably needed every single one of those previous experiences to have been set up for success to deliver the products that I did, right? And so I think one of the things that I want listeners to keep in mind is don't beat yourself up or feel that you're behind, because you're not. All of the experiences that you have now, they are providing you with the framework and the substance that you'll need to come up with your own unique perspective on what product management is and how you want to be a product manager, right? And that is something that is very precious. You should keep that, because at the end of the day, software is used by diverse users. And to build for these diverse users, we need diverse product managers. Because if we have kind of homogeneous product managers, we're going to not be able to solve for all of these different kinds of users. And so it's so crucial that you keep that perspective of yours, that you maintain that uniqueness. And so don't feel like, oh, I'm behind the curve, or like, oh, I'm not yet a product manager and like I need to rush it. You don't need to rush it. So long as you know what is the direction that I'm going in, why do I want to go in this direction, and do I have a concrete next step to test that I'm going the right direction, that itself is sufficient. So those were the things I would have wanted to tell myself back when I was younger.
That's fantastic. Very well said. Very well said. Thank you for that. I want to give you a few minutes to just talk a little bit about Product Teacher. If our listeners were a little bit more interested in some of the services that you can provide them, where would they go? What should they expect when they get there? And just give us a little pitch for Product Teacher.
Yeah, for sure. So what Product Teacher is it's the company that I founded basically to help product managers, whether you're an aspiring product manager or an experienced product manager, to accelerate your product management career. And the reason why I created Product Teacher was because as a PM myself, I found it sometimes very difficult to figure out how am I supposed to take that next step? I don't even know what next step to take. I don't know what other companies are looking for. I don't know how to get promoted. I don't know whether the things I'm doing at work are the right things I should be doing. I don't know necessarily if I'm prioritizing correctly. And I see that many people are all running into these same challenges, and I want to tackle that in a more scalable way. And so What Product Teacher currently has is we have a self-paced course called Solving the PM Interview. And that course was set up in a way where you can be a student or you can already be an experienced product manager. Those frameworks will still carry you through in that course. And folks who have used that course have been able to get product management offers at Amazon, at Redfin, at really large public companies, as well as fast-growing tech startups. And so that is something that I am really excited that we have out there, because now you're not gated on having to find, oh, where's Clement and is he available to speak? It's, oh, no. Here's all of the stuff that Clement would have told himself on how to prepare for interviews. It is all here for you to go use. And what I want to do in the coming quarters at Product Teacher is to create more of these courses. And so one of the things I'm going to be working on is how to establish a product management portfolio. I know that that's something that people really struggle with. And so let's pull that together in a way where people can actually use their own real life experiences. Even if you were never product manager before, if you were just a student club president, or if you were previously a project manager, or you were on customer support, we can use these experiences still and tell a really compelling story around what are my product management skills? How can I deliver value to your company based on my previous track record? Right? I think product management is very much a career of storytelling. And you need to tell compelling stories for people to understand that, one, you understand their pain, and that, two, you're the solution to their pain. That is incredibly important. And so those are the things that we're going to be doing here at Product Teacher. Those are going to be the self-paced courses. Outside of that, we also have resume reviews, one-on-one career coaching, all that fun stuff. And so to learn more, you can always find out more at www.productteacher.com. No spaces, it's just productteacher.com. So that's where you can find me. I have also written various books on product management. If you just look up Clement Cal on Amazon, I'm pretty sure I'm the only Clement Cal on Amazon. I'm not sure. My name's kind of rare. You can always use that to learn more about how to break into product management, how to level up your product management skills. I'm always here to serve as a resource. So for all the listeners out there, feel free to get in touch. You can find me at clement@productteacher.com. The way that you spell Clement is C-L-E-M-E-N-T. Think like cement, but then add an L after the initial C, right? So clement@productteacher.com. I read every email, so send it my way. I really would love to serve all of you and make product management easier for everyone. And with that, really, really grateful to have the opportunity to share some of my experiences here.
We hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you would like to check out Clement's course, Solving the PM Interview, go to courses.productteacher.com and enter the promo code PIP20 for a 20% discount. Good luck cracking that interview.
We hope you found this episode to be helpful. If you did, please subscribe, tell your friends, and give us a 5-star rating. Have a question or feedback? Click the link in the show notes.